We're back with the Paula Gordon Show. Kevin Phillips has written yet another important book he calls Bad Money, Reckless Finance, Failed Politics, and the Global Crisis of American Capitalism. Bill Russell?
We've had four conversations with you. We did that because we found that each time you would publish a book and it would show up, we would read it and find something insightful, intelligent, honest analysis.
And scary!
frequently scary, but what I would construe as reliable information. I say that, I made a fleeting reference to the quality of what the media has done.
Absent without leave.
AWOL. And it goes to me, a broader concern. The perpetrators, which include all the boosters in the media, all the boosters on the academics, you're not a great fan of, I think, academic economists, but the people who have led us into this, boldly, loudly, are all still chattering, all still saying things. They had, you know, essentially there have been no consequences. And this is sort of a personal question. Just, you know, having seen it, I mean, you've been an accurate viewer and in some cases participant in American history for the last several decades. It must be just immensely frustrating to mix my metaphors, to be Diogenes.
Oh dear!
You know, with your light held up and yet. The world just continues, you know, they sort of nod at you, and we continue down making the same kinds of mistakes, the mistakes that you've been pointing out.
Well, the worst thing is if you go back, and I got started four decades ago, essentially analyzing elections and political history. But as I got into that, I found in the 80s that I spent some of my time, and an increasing amount later, looking at the previous leading world economic powers and their problems. And the more you get into that and the more you develop a knowledge bank on it, the broader the view of it you can take. And so I've started turning my attention to how they failed politically to be able to do anything about these circumstances. And entrenched interests were almost insurmountable. I should say insurmountable, but the politicians weren't good enough to surmount them anyway. And that was the second thing. You had second-rate politics. And often a totally unraveled party system. The British had to deal with the decline of Britain in a period when the previous two-party system was coming undone. And I see nothing at the present time that suggests me that the leading candidates for president are talking about this level of problem. And I can sort of understand why a lot of people would think it was unnecessary, and we're America, you know, nothing can happen to us because the others thought the same thing. And there's no record of politicians being able to grapple with this and turn it around. So, yeah, I guess I've reached the point where all I think you can do is try to mitigate it and hope that the transition process is perhaps less painful than usual and that you come out at the end of the non-imperial tunnel and things are better.
This is the kinds of problems you lay out, you know, they are massive, they're interconnected, they're very complex, but they are at least addressable.
And they affect us all.
They may not be, they're not obviously solvable, but they at least can, you know, the consequences can be mitigated and we can at least address them if we had the will to do that. If we, you know, ourselves, but also the people we put in nominally responsible positions, if they were held accountable, as an example. It seems to me that some of what you're pointing to, which really looks like a disaster on the very short-term horizon, and we're not looking at a decade or two decades, that if we had the will, that we really, there are some things that we could be doing. Aren't there?
Well, let me be half devil's advocate here. First of all, the politicians are not willing to discuss most of the numbers we've tossed out. They don't want to have to admit that it happened on their almost joint watch because the two parties have been both involved. They can't call each other names. It's both of their faults. And individual candidates, I understand, don't really want to be the lone voice out there hitting this. The interest groups are really ready to roll. We've seen the way the financial sector has just raced in to basically grab the money for their institutions and worry about the taxpayers later. So I'm not all that sanguine. The other difficulty, I think, is that looking back at these previous countries, their politics could never grapple with it, as I indicated, and you tended to have leaders whose names you can't remember. Now, I can't say I think we will remember George W. Bush, because in contrast to most of these others, he had 8 years in the period of maximum spotlight, and he was probably, I think, the least accomplished president since Warren Harding. And all of this is going to be paid off. But you would think that the Democrats would have indicted this man from six different directions already, but they can't. And the fact that they don't seem to be able to do so suggests to me that this system is not going to blow the whistle on what's going wrong.
You talk about 40 or 50 years after one just has to face all of these catastrophic things, that in fact later, when these empires have given up their imperial, as in empire, pretensions, if you will, or actualities, that they do all right when they're just plain old nation states, but boy, it's hell to pay getting there, isn't it?
Well, the transformation process is the difficult part, simply because when you've had a country that's been on the top of the heap globally, and it's oriented its whole power structure towards essentially services and finance and things relating to that, and global ambition and being the policeman of the world and all the things that we see loud and clear in the United States, but they saw it in Britain too. When you don't have that world's leading currency, when you don't have the world's leading financial system, when you don't have the world's leading military, because you can't afford it anymore, and you have massive debt, well, then you can't do it anymore. And you have to go through the couple of decades or sometimes a couple of generations of paying for the unraveling of what was an overreach structure, really. And the British started unraveling in 1914, pretty much finished unraveling in 1949 when they had to finally devalue the pound again down to 280. So there you can say 35 years. I would say that's a relatively short one. One of the things people don't remember is that the British had food rationing for almost a decade after World War II. That was how weak and strung out they were. They didn't have as bad a time in the 1930s as we did, because their industry had paid a lot of the price already. So there were a lot of joblessness in the 20s. But this is what we have to start dealing with. And I don't see it this year.
Before we started, we were talking about a friend of ours who is a eminent scientist who is concerned, and we need to do some really important things in several areas before the resource wars start. And we were talking, and this is, I think, very important to what we're talking about here. There's a tendency to think that all of this is tomorrow and somebody else can deal with it. As you describe it, these resource wars have already started, that the behaviors of various countries around the world, the alliances, the agreements that are being worked out, political, energy, military, pick your favorite, strongly suggest that we may not know we're at war, but there are a lot of people in the world that seem to be, if not war, at least taking a fairly aggressive and in some cases hostile stance to the United States.
You could do a program on this. It would be easy because so many things are happening. I would say, and I know Alan Greenspan has said more or less the same thing, that Iraq was in some ways a resource war. We were fighting for oil. We certainly blew that one.
Badly.
Absolutely badly, because the OPEC producing nations ever since that time know we were out to topple them too, and they've paid back in spades and then quintupled oil prices. But you can pick a lot of countries that are scheming against us politically and in terms of currency, Iran, Venezuela, but they're far more than that. You go up in the Russians and the Chinese once it comes to energy, and you don't know what the Chinese are going to do on the currency front. And the wealth has been moving towards Asia. And Russia now at this point is really more an Asian power than a European power. And they are playing big-time games in Central Asia, as are the Chinese, as are the Iranians, as are the Indians, and as wealth migrates to this part of the world. Now, the U.S. military, I have to say, is very concerned about this. They don't know what they're going to do. And you get a lot of serious military officers are taking retirement, they're leaving their job, and they leave with what makes news for one day about how disgusted they are with the White House. Now, what they really ought to do in the Washington Post is have a series of what important military people think of the boobs in the White House. They could go, they could fill that one up.
They could sell some papers with
yes.
that one.
But the point is that they see some of this coming. We just, this week, you've seen the problems with Nigeria. That's probably going to be a full-fledged war. The Sudan, part of that's oil. Somalia, part of that's oil. Iran and Iraq and Saudi Arabia, a lot of it's oil. And just keep going down the list.
And that's before we start talking about water. Kevin Phillips will be with us for a few more minutes in just a moment. Be with us when we return.